Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstteeclinic.com.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Somebody just sent me this message. I did not know this, actually. 90% of bald people still own a comb. They just can't part with it.
Okay. This is the C Block, ladies and gentlemen. And we're just moving on from that, Alec. That was difficult. I like this from the 254. I actually don't mind Alec talking as a producer.
That's nice.
But Peyton sucks on the mic.
Oh, no.
And I'm so tired of him, of hearing about him and his girlfriend. And then they said their vent is over now. So
dang, man.
So, Alec, you got another one. One for Alec, zero for Peyton.
I need Sean to update the intro for me like each week, and we just keep a record going for like every time we do something bad versus something good.
I just want to let it be known. I do admire Peyton's efforts. All right. Working with that show that early in the morning cannot be an easy life.
So toxic. All right?
Just not that it's a toxic show.
I'll say it.
But like when it's a tough show to work on, you know? And you got to be up that early in the morning. Like that's difficult. I can see how you would just be pissed off at the world all the time.
We all work for the same station. Don't encourage this divisiveness.
If you had to get up that early, Kevin, it's less about the show and more about the time. You know, I've told you many times, it would take a lot of money for me to work that early in the morning. And that's why Sean does it, because he makes a lot of money. So there you go.
That is true.
All right. So I'll get to the what are you doing in stadium seats here in just a few minutes. But I saw this from Bleacher Report, thought it was interesting. They are scouting the Cowboys, and they went through this recent week's game. 11 penalties, 1-for-4 in the red zone, as we've discussed. No Brandon Cooks, but guess what? Jalen Tolbert, breakout performance. We're still excited about that. But what are the Cowboys' biggest weaknesses right now? Kevin, a few weeks ago, their biggest weakness was running back. And at the moment, they have number 5, safety. Now, you brought up recently that you didn't like how Malik Hooker missed that one. Catch the ball, Malik, is what the shirts you're making.
Especially because this defense doesn't have room for error. And so when you have back-to-back plays and you don't get either of the turnovers that feel like they were handed to you, that's going to cost you. I know they won the game. It is going to cost you at some point.
I just also want to let it be known, I am Team Alec all the way. We don't have to take such violent and vile shots at Peyton, though. It doesn't have to be that brutal, all right? He still is part of our fan team. So we can make fun of him.
Yes.
Nobody else out there can, all right?
So I like email him.
And if you're a Tolo, you're part of the we. So I guess go ahead and keep texting in. I'm just joking. Text in nice things about Alec instead.
Hey.
Number 4, and I agree with you completely on the margin of error for the Cowboys. You don't have a lot of space to do things like that. So when you can get turnovers, it's important. But what's really wild is how much it's changed from last year.
Yeah.
And how even Cowboys were at their peak last year, I mean, they still were really good at it, but lost.
Yeah.
So it's I mean, I guess this is a defense where you feel like, look, we're not letting you run on us anymore. So far, the last two games, they haven't been able to run. So that's good. You feel like it's more of a don't completely bend, but we're not going to break. Like ultimately Mike Zimmer doesn't want to bend at all.
Sure.
But he does understand that the closer we get to the red zone, we're a better team there, or a better team around that area. And we're not just going to sell out rush the passer. We're going to do a lot of other things that are going to get us there. Hopefully the Cowboys can continue that. Number 4 on their biggest weaknesses, center. I don't agree with this, because I think that he's growing into the spot. Maybe that's me just being too easy on him. But do you think that center is a weakness for this team right now?
I don't, but I want to see how the rest of your list plays out before I'm like, ooh, I would have replaced that with this.
Number three on this list is defensive end. That makes a lot of sense, right? But they played well in this game.
They did. They did. I know the argument's going to be made that who are the quarterbacks that you've beaten?
Okay.
Justin Fields, Deshaun Watson, and Daniel Jones. So
Daniel Jones is bad at
Not football. Exactly the luminaries of professional football.
So bad at football that most women should just avoid him.
I don't know if he's dating Kay Adams or not.
Just in case. Number two, and when it comes to defensive ends, I'm interested when Micah and DeMarcus Lawrence come back.
Sure.
Do you immediately say we're good there? Because, again, early in the season, they weren't good enough.
Yeah.
Micah's a little light at the position whenever they start running at him. Tyrus Wheat was able to stand up against whenever they said we're running at you.
He played way better than I thought he would. That is one of the odd potential benefits of getting injuries. You get a chance to really see like what your depth players can do. And you're right. Micah and DeMarcus Lawrence weren't taking over the world when they were here, so I'll take as many reinforcements as possible.
The one thing I will say about depth, though, is it's depth for a reason.
Yes.
And one of the things about depth is you don't often see it. So whenever you go up against it, you don't know their weaknesses. Like Micah, you're like, run right at him. You feel pretty confident in that.
Yeah.
Tyrus Wheat, well, we don't know. We just don't have enough tape on him right now. As more tape happens, I wonder how consistently good he stays, and I wonder where that kind of lines up. So hopefully we found a player that we didn't know, you know, but there is a possibility that you're like, okay, there's a couple things he did wrong, and these teams, they figure it out pretty quickly.
They do.
And then you got to adjust and readjust and readjust, and then the playoffs hit you, you know, and then you got to hope that you've adjusted enough and have the right lineup to go up against it. Number two on this list, nose tackle.
I mean, I figured once you said edge as opposed to the defensive line, I figured this was the next logical step.
Now, Mickey's told us earlier, Mozzie's been better. I still think the position has a lot to prove to me.
Yeah.
And Linval Joseph, that one play he made where he just pushed the center over and said, I'm coming at you.
It was incredible.
Awesome. I wanted to see more of it throughout that game. And hopefully there is more of that to go. And then the number one weakness for this team at the moment, according to Bleacher Report, Kevin, is left tackle.
Okay. I'm glad that you said that, because if you didn't, I was like, did I miss left tackle? Especially when we talk with Steven.
And this has changed, by the way, multiple times this year from what the Cowboys' weaknesses are.
So especially when we talked to Steven and he said he does not see a situation in which Tyler Guyton is healthy, but Tyler Smith plays left tackle. So you're riding with Guyton as soon as he's healthy, and it looks good for this week. That is a concern. I'm not saying he won't eventually be great and he's not going to get better throughout the season. But you're trying to win games right now, and he's a detriment to that, whether it's losing a man or losing a man and committing a holding penalty to save it. He is a detriment right now.
Yeah, and you brought up on the defensive side of the ball the small margin of error.
Yes.
Offense absolutely has proven that they don't have a very wide margin of error either, because points are difficult to come by. Seven points are difficult to come by right now. And again, that holding call in the red zone could be the difference between 6-3.
Definitely.
That false start, that illegal shift, the whatever it is that's happening with your tackle. And then it kind of becomes contagious when that happens. Good play is contagious.
I agree with
that. Bad play is also contagious.
I also agree with that.
And whenever, like, I'll go to this. My kid Carter lined up on an offensive line. The guy next to him false starts. He jumped off too, because the guy next to him did. He's like, I watched the ball, but when I saw him move, I went too. And I was like, yeah, I get it. I understand. It's that kid's fault though.
Yeah.
but again, it's contagious. It goes across the board. You're thinking, because if you're Zach Martin or you're Tyler Smith, man, I got to make up for the dude next to me right now. There was a play, and I want to talk a little more about this with Broadus. The Guyton, I think it was the play he got hurt on. Tyler Smith was bouncing out there to try and help out. And Tyler Smith missed and whiffed on it completely too, because the guy saw that Smith was going at his direction, and he said, I'm going away from that, just wrapping around the guy who's in the way, and that's Tyler Guyton right now. The suggestions for the Cowboys. Okay. Now, these are, one of them is an ad now. I don't know if this ad now works completely.
Do you tune out at all when you see the ad now or the trade to make right now, knowing that like this franchise usually doesn't do that?
No.
Okay.
Because I want to consider the option.
Sure.
Even if the Cowboys won't. But I want to be like, you know what? Maybe this would be a better thing. Because of Donovan Wilson and Malik Hooker's play, they suggest trading for Buda Baker from the Arizona Cardinals. Now, again, I don't know if the Cardinals are willing to do that. But he has a contract. Luke.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Lucrative trade chip because he wanted a new contract last offseason,
yeah,
before settling for a raise instead. And also, he's one of the most talented players at any position slated to reach the open market next year.
Okay.
Now, that could be a how much are you giving up in order to receive that? And are the Cardinals in that position where they're willing to give that up? Or are they in a position where they're like, hey, man, we actually need to keep rolling with this, but I do think they're probably going to get some calls. You know, the Cowboys, they aren't the ones calling. They're like, hey, will you call us first?
Yeah, I don't always love that method of business, but you're right.
Then they also say, hey, let's go ahead and do this in free agency. Go ahead and get Will Hernandez out of the Cardinals as well. Ooh, because Zach Martin at 34 is at that point. Look, man, I'm not ready to ever give up on Zach Martin until he tells me to.
Fair.
When he says, I'll see you later and rides off into the sunset, look, I will admire that.
I agree with you there because he was furious about the dehydration. He was like telling people, I've never got cramps in my entire life. And like, if you still have that passion, great.
Then the suggestion at running back or at, in the draft, Kevin, is to get Quinshon Judkins at Ohio State running back.
Is that you're
in tune with all the college stuff?
If you can make it happen for Genty, I'm here for that.
Is Judkins good?
Absolutely.
Those guys, you're like, he's an upgrade.
Oh my God, he's an upgrade for sure. It just feels like a lot of college football, at least running back wise, revolves around this one player. It's interesting because there's a couple of like unbelievable young wide receivers who won't even be draft eligible for a little bit. You've got the running back from Boise State. You have a lot of marquee discussion about quarterbacks from Milroe to Ewers to now even Arch Manning. So that would still be an upgrade for sure.
All right. And then the conversation I wanted to have about what you're doing in the stadium seats.
And I have a warning for you from Fernando Tatis.
Huh?
That's right.
All right. Go ahead with your warning then.
You were talking some smack about him earlier with your coded language.
I said he juiced one out.
Mm-hmm. So Ken Rosenthal wrote an article about the Padres going back to game two when Flaherty hit Tatis with the pitch, and there's this whole big thing. He wrote, Manny Machado is far from the only Padres irritant. Tatis Jr. is a smiling, dancing peacock. That's a weird thing to say. Profar is the kid who pulls the fire alarm at school and then asks, who, me? I think Fernando Tatis heard about that because he posted a picture of him just like being freaking pumped on Instagram and embedded the emoji of a peacock and a guy dancing. So he hears the critique. So be careful, Corey. I don't want Fernando Tatis Jr. to come after you.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
That's all.
I will. I don't think he will.
Okay.
Just
help him.
When Carter started playing football this year, this was our first year to actually be like in the stadium seats.
Yeah.
And so am I old? I told Adrian, I need you to buy one of those cushiony seats. And she went to Amazon and got one that has a pad that's got to be about 6 inches thick.
Oh.
And then it's got a back on it. It has a back so I could lean back. I was like, hey, why didn't you get the one that rocks back and forth? You know, because at this point I got a little bougie with it because we already got the back on it. I remember I used to see parents carrying the Plano Wildcats cushion or whatever it was. And I was like, come on, it can't be that bad. But after you've sat in a stadium seat for just a few minutes, you're like, I got to get up and walk around just a minute.
Okay, what I like to do is find where there's not other people in front or back of me and just lean all the way back. So you lean back into the next row of bleachers, and then you can also put your feet up on the next row of bleachers. Like, you're not going to do this in a...
Or they have the fence back there.
Yes,
yeah, that
exactly.
You can lean on.
So you're not going to do this in an environment that's packed. But I'm saying, like, for your kids' game, you probably have room in the stands.
Yeah, it isn't packed. Yeah. It isn't completely packed.
And so I like those scenarios, and I'm like, hey, let's go sit over here. People can sit next to us, but like front and back, I need some space.
It might be the best purchase, though. I am telling you, I'm so proud of Adrian for this purchase. This is that Amazon. I wanted to say I couldn't justify it, but now that I've sat these seats, even my dad, because my dad's been coming to the games too. I was like, hey, Dad, you want this? Because he has a bad back too. And I was like, hey, you know, you're old. You can sit here. And he's like, oh my gosh, this is like sitting on the couch at home. I'm like, I know, right? It's luxury on a middle school bleacher set. So there you go. That's my suggestion. If you go out there and you're looking at it, you're like, should I get it? You should.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, let's go back to basketball. I have across the NBA questions for you, as well as what do general managers think about starting a team with Luka? We'll do it next right here on The Fan. KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. We're going to go back through some NBA stuff, but I wanted to give you a heads up as well if you want to go see Mark Henry.
Oh, yeah.
Mark Henry, by the way, we're working on getting him on our show as well. But tomorrow, he is going to be at Dallas Vintage Toys starting at 3 o'clock. I believe it's from 3 to 6. So if you want to go see him at Dallas Vintage Toys, he is all obviously a humongous Texas fan. So he's here for Red River Rivalry.
I thought you were going to say humongous toy collector. And I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't know this.
He could be. Mm-hmm. I do not know if that is true or untrue. So I wanted to run through this. NBA.com did their NBA GM survey, and they had a whole bunch of questions leading into the season. There's 50 questions. That's too many damn questions. So I wanted to just run through the most pertinent ones when it comes to the Mavs and maybe the most interesting ones. Where do you think GMs have the Mavericks finishing in the West?
In the West, third?
So they have them finishing fourth.
Okay.
Essentially, you know, you could vote where you think they'll finish. And 7% say that the Mavericks will finish first in the West. And 73% of the GMs said they'll be in the top four. So that is encouraging. But they've got them behind Oklahoma City, Minnesota, and Denver.
Okay.
With Dallas being at number four. And as long as you get into that top four, I still think you would have an advantageous matchup.
Great group to be the first round. To be predicted to be
yes,
part of.
Very fair.
Man, everybody's really that high on Oklahoma City, huh?
Yeah. This
Shea sold everybody losing to the Mavericks last year.
Well, believe it or not, you're probably not going to love this next one. Who is going to win the MVP?
Shea
Gilgeous-Alexander at 40%. Luka's at 30%.
Because Mike's been like he's like, look, I think OKC's going to do it all this year.
Yeah.
And I know it's going to be tough for the Mavericks, that tough road to get back, and Shea's definitely in the way.
Now, which player forces opposing coaches to have the most adjustments?
Luka.
Luka is number one, 33%, followed by
Jokic.
Steph, then Jokic,
okay,
then Giannis and Embiid. It's interesting when we get to this other question. So Luka, second in MVP voting. Who causes you the most adjustments? Luka is first. If you were starting a franchise today and could sign any player, who would it be?
This is tough because I homer for Luka on this because of how much he has the ball. But I think, who was it? Kuzma said the only untradeable player right now is Wembanyama.
Yeah.
So I would say everybody would start there because he is a lethal weapon.
Only four players got votes.
Okay.
In this category. Luka, 3%. Jokic.
It must be.
And Shea got 10% each.
This is a GM's poll
to me. Yep.
Wonder how much Luka rubs other GMs the wrong way.
Oh.
Like, I don't think he's one of those dudes like, I have the power, but he's a little bit too much of a star for a lot of people. I wonder if that is something that they're afraid of, or if they're just looking at it. I don't know. Maybe there's no bias in this. But again, this is a dude that has the basketball all the time. But I guess you can't tell him to not yell at the referees. He's not going to listen to you.
Yeah.
And that's going to be something that's in the way. There are things about Luka that I think GMs are like, I can't control that.
Yeah, I'm not.
But it's Wimby is easily the place you want to start.
Yeah. And I'm a little surprised about Shea, because I think Shea's like, I don't know, 6 or 8 months older than Luka.
Yeah.
So it's not like necessarily an age thing, but you think about it, 3% for Luka, 10 for Jokic, 10 for Shea. I told you only four players got votes. That means 77% of GMs in the league would go with Victor Wembanyama.
Okay.
That is remarkable.
That is a lot.
Now, this is going to confuse you even more.
Okay.
Who's the best point guard in the NBA?
Is Shea a point guard?
Yes.
I guess Shea?
You'd think that, but it's Luka. So
okay.
Luka gets 37% of the vote. Shea gets 30%. Then Steph and Brunson. So it's interesting.
Do you think Shea is as good of a passer as Luka?
I probably don't think anybody in the NBA legitimately.
I'm glad you said
nobody
that.
Nobody in the NBA is as good of a passer as Luka.
That's why I think the GMs answer it that way, because the purity of the point guard position is passer, and Luka's the best at it.
Yeah. It's weird to see the way this plays out, because they're like, who's better, Luka or Shea? Luka. Who is more likely to face, to have you cause adjustments? Luka. Who would you rather have? Shea. Which I don't totally understand.
No, I get it. I totally get it. Yeah.
Do you?
Nope.
This is what's amazing about Luka, though. He is, because Shea can be a combo guard. They have Shea at second in point guard and third in shooting guard.
Okay.
Luka's first in point guard and tied for second in small forward.
Yeah, he is
incredible.
His size allows him to be so many different positions.
Absolutely.
Somebody said BS, Jokic is the best passer. I think it's different. Jokic is a fantastic passer, though, for a big man.
I love Nikola Jokic. I think he is a better player than Luka. Not by a ton, but he's better. I just think Luka is the better pure passer. I really do.
He sees the court differently. I do wonder if their bodies were switched. I think they both would be pretty much the same as both of them are. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Like the way their minds see the court, Jokic just happens to be able to see it. He can see it from the 3-point line, but he can also, he sees it so well from having his back to the basket and knowing how to distribute around that. And Luka doesn't necessarily have to do that much.
Now, Jason Kidd does not make the top cut in terms of best coach, best in-game adjustments, best offense, or best defensive schemes. However, best manager / motivator of people, Jason Kidd, number 6 on the list. Eric Spoelstra runs away with this category easily.
Wow, not even Mazzulla, huh? The psychopath we talked about yesterday.
Best assistant coach in the NBA, Sean Sweeney, 3rd on the list at 10%.
He's damn good.
I agree. I'm surprised by this. Which team is the most fun to watch?
I'm sorry. Before I get to that answer, I say Sean Sweeney's damn good. Last year was a struggle until they finally got players that could do what Sean Sweeney needed.
And then it worked out just fine.
And then in the playoffs, we've seen it 2 times now. When Sweeney's on that bench, they've been able to extend runs because of the adjustment he makes within he and Jason Kidd. I'm going to give Jason Kidd some credit there too. But because of those adjustments that they've been able to make, they've been able to make extended runs to Western Conference and the NBA Finals. So that's why I say he's damn good, because it's not just what you do during the regular season. Those playoff runs are important. Back to you.
Which team is the most fun to watch from the 2-1-4? I think it's got to be the Rockets. That is interesting.
I cannot stand watching the Rockets.
Really?
Yeah.
They did not finish in the top 5. But guess what? Neither did the Mavericks. The Indiana Pacers lead the way. followed by the Oklahoma City Thunder, the Denver Nuggets, Golden State Warriors, and Boston Celtics.
It's an interesting group.
It is an interesting group.
Because, like, I feel like Golden State's kind of losing it, but it's fun to watch Steph still.
That is very
true. That's still true.
Now, a couple of other NBA questions for you. Let's start with Klay Thompson. Do you think he can discover his new role and old touch with the Mavericks?
I do. Because I don't think there's as much stress on him to be a number two on a team.
Okay.
Or be, you know, he really doesn't even have to be the number three. He can be the 4, 5, 6 guy. He can be sixth man of the year on this roster.
Man, that would be interesting to see.
He's wearing 31. He's wearing Jets number.
Yeah.
You know, he could be that because of how far he could be down on the bench, but still be important. That six man role, we've always looked at that a little differently here in Dallas.
Alec, I'm going to ask you and Corey this one. Do y'all see the Bucks and Giannis as still being serious title contenders?
Yes.
Last year was unfortunate.
Yes, but also no. Because I think they've lost some distance between them and the top teams.
Okay.
I still think Giannis is that great of a player, but there's a lot of distance, I think, between them and the best ones.
I have to say yes, just because Giannis still exists and still is who he is. But that team composition, we've seen similar kind of roster construction in the past decade where teams try to get that 1-2 punch that you think on paper looks perfect, but then you're sacrificing on the end of the bench. And you saw it with the Boston Celtics. You don't have like the world beater like a Giannis, where you still have really talented guys that are in the upper echelon of the NBA, but they're, you know, 6th and 7th guys are still probably some, you put them on a bad team, they're an elite player. You know, they don't have that. So I'm going to say they are, but I don't expect much from them.
Go ahead.
This is a Cowboys thing I want to throw at the end here.
With their own arena, are the Clippers finally going to move out of the Lakers' shadow?
Nope. Okay. Sorry.
Just
think about it. The group they have, still old. And then if you say, well, you know, we got some of these other guys that we've signed contracts to, role players. Like, your star is hurt and already talking about, I'm probably going to have to manage my knee again.
Yeah.
They're done.
Can Anthony Edwards lead the Wolves on a finals run?
Yeah, he can. Luka's in the way.
Oh, so is Shea. I like that.
So's Jokic.
You know what? A lot of
West is tough.
A lot of people, when we were talking about the most fun team, obviously Indiana came up with Tyrese Haliburton. Then I saw at least one or two other people say Haliburton is the best passer in the league. I think he's in the mix, but I wouldn't say best. I would go with Luka first, but everyone, I appreciate their opinions. How much higher can Tyrese Haliburton and the Pacers go?
I mean, they have a championship coach. We know Rick Carlisle's ability to play mind games with you to be great.
And they made it to the Eastern Conference Finals, which I think stunned everybody.
And if you want and have the desire to be great, Rick Carlisle's the perfect coach. If you don't want to be great, Rick Carlisle's not the coach for you.
Yeah.
Because he's going to coach you hard. Dirk loved it, right? Because Dirk was trying to get something, and he believed that guy could help him do it. Haliburton is really, really talented. I don't know. I don't know how much further they are away from being that, but I think they're in the discussion. I think they might be better than Knicks still.
I think they made it to the Eastern Conference Finals, and that's their ceiling with the Celtics around.
Ceiling, dude. The Celtics are a well constructed team.
They are,
with a psycho head coach, and now they are taking on his mentality, and that's scary because of the athleticism, the ability to guard so many different positions with so many different players. I mean, Tatum and Jaylen Brown alone, and now Derek White also, can guard 4 different spots on the court, maybe even 5 at times. And then they stretch you out with their ability to shoot threes and also their ability to get to the basket. So it's a very difficult figuring out them during the offseason.
All right, Cowboys.
Oh, this is just a very small thing, Kevin. Derek Eagleton on Twitter, somebody asked him because they released the Cowboys sounds from the sidelines, and that somebody said, hey, can we hear what Lamb was saying to Dak? And he said, quote, jump ball 4, I got you.
So it was a lot of people speculating.
If you thought there was any animosity, sounds like it's not. He was just telling his teammate, I got you. And Dak was processing while he was going through it.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, let's chat with those fellas from the G-Bag Nation right here on 105.3 The Fan.
Here's the 0-2. And Tatis sends it in the air. Deep to left field. Hernandez is back. Looking up. Gonna go! Two-run homer, Fernando Tatis Jr. And it is a six-run second inning.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Right now, courtesy of D&M Leasing, it's time for our chat with those fellas from the G-Bag Nation. Gentlemen, how is you today?
Terrific, Heggie. How are you?
I'm good. Broadus, how are you?
Dawson, fountain of misinformation over there.
What's going on today, bro? Have we confirmed the age of our assistant coaches on this team?
40.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a guy by the same name.
Okay.
I looked it up and I'm like, no way, he's freaking 55.
So
he's aging like a biblical figure.
Yeah, I know. And Methuselah running neck. So young.
For a redheaded white guy, he definitely is aged well. Right.
So is this double unfortunate for George Pickens, who had the eye black that said open effing always? Which the NFL is now reviewing, because you're not supposed to have explicit messages on your eye black, but also he did nothing.
He wasn't,
in the game.
That was a really nice work by the Cowboys to lock him up.
That feels like an unfortunate little double whammy right there. Now, we talked about this in the morning crosstalk. How into the baseball playoffs are you or have you been? I know Broadus goes, we got day baseball today, and it's stacked. So it goes, I think 207, 407, 607, 807. So there's a lot of day baseball.
Let's go.
Actually, Kevin, it's 208, 408, 608, 808.
So close.
Sorry about that.
Now I'm the misinformation.
They gave you the extra minute for national broadcast.
I'm definitely into it enough to be excited about seeing the highlights and keeping up on it, but not fired up enough to watch it. Yeah. Unless I'm in studio during the G-Bag Nation, we'll have a proper round tripper for you at 6 o'clock to recap the first couple games.
Well, see, this is when, but every once in a while you get a little fortune. Dawson will do some play-by-play for you.
I know. He will
throw down and say, oh, there's a double into the alley. You know, he'll give you that every once in a while. But I'll tell you, we had day hockey yesterday.
Yes.
It was pretty cool.
That was a little day hockey, but anytime it was neat.
Yeah, it was a good
outside
good
of
day.
New Year's Day, that feels very unusual to
it
get
was.
The weekday day hockey.
It's very strange to have that that puck drop there. And it was two teams that I was like, okay, I guess this makes sense why we're doing this now, like Seattle and St. Louis.
Kraken were all over him in that one. And then they gave
the Blues.
Yeah, the Blues.
That third period got juicy.
Got juicy.
I want y'all to ponder this while I play you some audio. We're going to go to cut number 12. This is the wrestler Jey Uso. He is the Intercontinental Champion right now. He was asked about his Waffle House order, and he had a lot of information to share.
Triple hash browns.
Ooh.
Scattered and covered. You got to know the language.
Scattered
if you don't,
and
I mean, it's like going to Starbucks.
They're cooked.
You know what I'm saying? You can't say large.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? We don't know.
Yeah.
Six scrambled eggs with cheese. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Two waffles with chocolate chip cookies.
Awesome.
Hold up, I ain't done.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Lemonade, the two lemonades there, you know what I'm saying? I don't drink nothing else but lemonade at Waffle House. I might need like three or four of those. And then maybe a coffee at the end.
You full after?
Nah.
He said no, I'm not full at the end.
I'm assuming
I could go round two.
Two waffles with chocolate chips, not chocolate chip cookies, but who knows?
I'll tell you what, I like the order. I wish you'd have gone with the pecan pancakes.
Mm.
And the waffles. Instead of the waffles. Yeah, I'd have gone with the pecan pancakes.
Maybe your French toast.
French toast would have been great. Scattered means crispy hash browns. So you got to know that.
He's on the
lingo.
And he let people know. He's like, you got to know.
You got to know.
Waffles, too. Those waffles are big.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking all that lemonade and then a coffee chaser. You got to hit a pit stop on the way home.
Pretty quick, right?
You'll be going number one within 5 minutes.
You mentioned the two waffles is a lot, but it always feels like you're like, I know that waffle's going to be so good. I'm going to get another one. And then Waffle House always puts on there like, hey, don't be sharing these waffles. Like, if we're going to give you one at a discount price, or at least they used to do that, don't be sharing that with anybody. I still think Waffle House makes an amazing omelet as well.
They do.
And they really do.
It is a fascinating night to go at like 3 in the morning and watch their line cooks with all that flat top.
Yes.
And they've got They've got burgers on one side. They got waffles. They've got hash browns. They got eggs. This thing is a navigation of beauty when it comes to cooking. We're watching those guys, how they work that flat top.
Yeah.
I get mesmerized sitting at the counter just watching those guys work.
It smells amazing.
It is. It smells amazing. Mm. Do you ever feel like when you go to the Waffle House, you get more than you even paid for?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
I overtip at the Waffle House every affordable. Single time. The ladies are so nice. The line cooks do a hell of a job. But I feel like I'm getting way more food than I paid for.
And they've been there. When you say the ladies, it feels like the wait staff so often has been there so long, they know exactly what you need and when you're going to need it. Yeah. And you're like, can I? Here you go.
Yeah.
Like, oh, dip, that's what I was going to ask
for. Yeah, they are handing you the hot sauce before you ask for the hot sauce.
Because they know.
They know.
I can sense it.
Yeah.
How often do you guys make your way to the Waffle House? Because I always like Waffle House. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I go there often enough, because I do think it's delicious, but I'm like, I haven't been there in a really long time.
In the 20s, it was a lot. In my 20s, a lot. Yeah.
It's fun to go with a group of people.
True.
It's just a fun way. But like I said, I've got to the point where, like, I was going to covering the Senior Bowl and stuff like that. And you go late at night and you sit there, and that's where I got mesmerized by watching the guys cook. And so, but it's to me, when you go with a group of people after an event or having fun, and you could be dressed up too.
Sure.
You could have a coat and tie on.
People watching.
Dressed up, dressed down, it doesn't matter.
People don't care. You just walk in there and you're like family with everybody in the whole place.
It is funny the camaraderie you get in that restaurant versus everywhere else. And for the 903, you get a free show. I will agree.
Yeah.
If you go to a Waffle House, there's usually something that happens that you're like, I am glad that's not happening to me. Or occasionally, I wish that was happening to me.
Yeah. I mean, that can also happen in a Whataburger on a Friday night.
That's true.
In the state of Texas.
I went to an IHOP once on a Saturday night where somebody definitely thought they could try to round second and keep moving down the base pass. And it did not work out. And the police
was
came
that your
in.
Date?
No, that was not.
It's just Corey working on his gardening skills.
The police got called. It was It was definitely a happening.
I'll tell you what, the Waffle House staff, they take it a little bit like Mardi Gras. You know, like the police in New Orleans are really tolerable. You can do a lot of crazy things.
They want to see what's happening.
And the staff kind of lets you go at it until you go too far.
Until you cross over onto their side. Now you've gone too far.
Now you've gone way too far.
They're probably like, you think you're being crazy. I've seen 85 things way crazier than what you're doing right now.
This was always I had this one friend, because we lived next to a Waffle House. It was over there in Garland. And we our apartment was right around the corner from it. And it was on the way home from a night in Deep Ellum. And whenever we'd be in that direction, he was always so hammered that whatever was going on behind him didn't care. He's just eating. Like, there's noise and chairs flying. He's just right there eating. So that was his thing, man.
All my Waffle House experiences have been pretty tame. I've never had the late night.
Okay.
I used to go there quite a bit when we did middays and we'd have a remote somewhere.
Yeah.
I'd go do the show prep and have, you know, quiet little breakfast.
That is a really good idea. Yeah. Go ahead.
Real quick, have you ever seen the video of Anthony Bourdain when he went in there? He and another chef.
Yeah.
He and another famous chef. They were hammered. They were both hammered.
Uh-huh.
And Bourdain had never been to a Waffle. And he did a whole episode about what he ordered at Waffle. And he was like, flat iron steak. Doesn't sound appetizing at all. Maybe one of the best steaks I've ever had in my life.
Wow.
Salad. Thousand Island dressing. Maybe one of the best salads I've ever had in my life. I mean, he was going through all the, and the guy next to him was like, you got to order this, man. You got to order this. You got to order this way. And he did, and he just sat there, and it was amazing how they were just this documentary of a meal at the Waffle House and how much fun they had there.
What are the odds that you go to a Waffle House and all the letters are in proper working order? Because I feel lost the W and it's the Waffle House. You lost one of the Fs.
No, never.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I think as well.
Where was that place when we were in Arizona for the Super Bowl? Where did we were next to a Waffle House? Where did me and Bassick basically eat every
day? It was
day?
An IHOP.
It was an IHOP?
Yeah, went to IHOP. I got that picture.
We were next to the IHOP.
Yeah. Okay, so that me and Bassick seemed to have a meal there every night.
My follow up was going to be who's your favorite intercontinental champion of all time?
Oh.
I feel like I got to go with Bret the Hitman Hart. Loved his intercontinental reigns. What about you? You missed a perfect guy. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Is that the DDT dude?
Underrated, yes. Okay. Man. That is the DDT guy. One of the best promos ever.
Yeah, like absolutely. The Legend. British Dotson. He was always
shut up. You know it's the British Bulldog. I hate you for that. The
British Dotson.
What do you guys got coming up on the program today?
Pure Gold as always. Heggy, thanks so much for asking. It's a double guest Wednesday at 4 o'clock. We're going to talk with Bobby Carella, and then at 4:40, Lisa Asimakopoulos. Ooh, talking Stars.
She's an excellent reporter. Roll home Leah. With the G-Bag Nation.
You crushed it.
Did such
it,
a good
right?
job on the last name.
You
I messed really up the first name.
We have been the KNC Masterpiece. Make your way back with us tomorrow, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here on 105 Through the Fan.
Thanks for limited jokes today, Kevin. No, don't do it.
We'll see.
I don't need it. I can just stick my finger in it and see if it's wet or not.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.